this is a paper on the crisis in the welfare state that, in the meantime, since I submitted it to the conference, has already been accepted for publication in Journal of European Social Policy. I'm going to skip most of the paper, actually. The main idea is that the relationship between the crisis and the welfare state is not as unidirectional as many people believe. And I identify three effects. One is from the welfare state to the crisis, the welfare state contributing to the severe crisis faced by Greece in now, actually, over the last few months. The second effect is from the crisis. The crisis as a cause of welfare state transformation. And there is a third effect, which is about the role of the welfare state, the historical role of the welfare state as a factor which mitigates the social effects of the crisis. So I'm going to say a few things about each. Can we seriously believe that the welfare state is to be blamed for the crisis? Well, not entirely. Although we know from an earlier literature on growth to limits and the role of social spending in the fiscal crisis of the state, and even on the rather difficult relationship between capitalism and democracy, that there may be an effect in that sense. In other words, that there is a natural, or so was believed in the 1970s, a natural tendency, irreversible tendency, of welfare expenditure to grow, and how that threatens the foundations of liberal economies. Now, looking back, we can see that the predictions of these theories turned out to be rather wrong, in the sense that there was nothing irreversible about social expenditure. Actually, the increasing trend in social expenditure was reversed, sometimes brutally, sometimes much less so. In most of continental Europe, for example, social expenditure was reined in through reforms that only minimally affected in a negative way the quality of services or the level of social benefits, and yet they were successful in reducing expenditure, or rather reducing the rate of growth of social expenditure. Now, in the case of Greece, we may actually, the case of Greece makes you think that perhaps the pessimistic predictions of the 1970s had something going for them, in the sense that for 20 long years the Greek welfare state, and especially the pension system, actually looked unreformable, as one after the other attempts to reform pensions and to stop the explosionary rise in pension expenditure. Some of these attempts were half-hearted, others more determined, but they all failed in one way or another. So you may come to the conclusion that there is a discussion in the paper. For example, as you can see from this graph, it's not so much that current pension expenditure was so high. It was high, but not hugely above the European average, only 2 percentage points, and quite comparable to that of Italy, for example, or other countries, Austria. What was striking about Greek pensions was that the projected rise in expenditure was unsustainable. There is no society in the world that can devote one quarter of GDP to pensions. This can't be happen. It can't happen. In fact, it wasn't going to happen, and something would have to be done about stopping the rise in pension expenditure. And of course, the more we left it until later and we postponed change, the more dramatic change would turn out to be. So the thing is that pension expenditure was predicted to reach high levels even over the next 2 decades, for example, when some of the Greek bonds were scheduled to expire. And this contributed to the agitation of international markets about the sustainability of the Greek debt and the ability of the Greek government to honor its commitments. Now, of course, the rising pension expenditure is talked about in economic terms, in terms of financial viability or lack of it. But another way to look at it is from the point of view of equity. The very nature of fiscal unsustainability constitutes a violation of one type of equity, which is intergenerational equity. But also with respect to intragenerational equity, in the sense of the performance of Greek pensions in meeting distributory goals now, at the current time, even that is poor. Poverty in old age is higher than in other European countries that spend much less than Greece on pensions, and inequalities is higher. As I said before, one could conceive of the failure to reform pensions as a failure of political economy, in the sense that here we are facing a clearly unsustainable and very unjust, inequitable pension system, which violates all sorts of principles one can think of, and yet winners were too powerful and losers of the current system too weak, and therefore the political system was unable to overcome the resistance of those who enjoy privileges under the current system, and advocacy coalitions for reform proved too weak, and the result was immobility for 20 years. Now, of course, once the crisis erupted, things changed, and the austerity measures that were implemented in 2010 already affected the welfare state in two senses. One in the narrow fiscal sense, in other words, there was less money available to properly fund certain welfare services and welfare benefits, but there was another more structural effect, the policy effect, that the crisis accelerated the reform of the pension system. And it is quite striking that the pension system that was unreformable or seemed unreformable for 20 years was radically reformed in the space of 2 months. I'll show you a few graphs on the distributional effects of the crisis, including the austerity measures, but also the rise in unemployment from a recent study of mine with Chrisa Leventi. This graph shows you who contributed to the fiscal consolidation effort of the Greek government in the sense of their position in the income distribution from the poorest to the richest, and which policy instruments were most successful in cutting deficits, and the other way to look at it, who shouldered the cost of these measures. So you can see that the rich paid more in absolute terms, but not as much in relative terms. I will show you another graph. And that most of the job was actually done by VAT, which is a notoriously regressive measure, and to which the poorest 10% of the population made a very significant contribution. In terms of income loss, if you adjust 2010 euros for inflation, because the thing about the Greek crisis was that we had inflation as well, 4%, 4.5%. So if you adjust for that, you will see that while in absolute terms, in euro terms, the rich lost more than the poor, in relative terms, the dotted line, the income loss of the poorest sectors of the population was very significant indeed, and quite comparable to that of those further up the income scale. However, if you look at how the crisis, at least according to our estimates, affected the income distribution, it would be rather incorrect to say that inequality has changed very much. I don't think it has. We don't know yet, but I expect it hasn't. This is the relative position of each income decile. Recall that this is a relative position, in other words, a relative size of each piece in a shrinking pie, right? The overall size of the pie shrunk. But it looks as if the relative position of the poor as well as the rich were deteriorated, while that of medium to high incomes improved the relative position. Now, with respect, I thought I had 1 minute left. With respect to pension reform, I'll go through it very quickly. We have a rather radical pension reform in the sense that it is path-breaking. It moves away from Bismarckian social insurance pensions towards a multi-tier structure that is not unlike what you find in places like Denmark, for example, a basic pension and a proportional pension, except, of course, that the Greek basic pension and proportional pension will be much less generous than the Danish ones, but the structure is very similar. So the basic pension will be something like 360 euros a month, and it will be nearly universal, mm-hmm. while the proportional pension will be nearly actuarial, in other words, exactly proportional to contributions, and the replacement rates will be rather low. So after 40 years, a worker will retire with a proportional pension of 60% of lifetime earnings, which is rather low. To this, they will add the 360 euros per month of the basic pension. I'll skip that and move straight to coping with the crisis. In all this, we risk forgetting that the main role of the welfare state is to help individuals and their families to cope with the social effects of the crisis, what some people call the core business of the welfare state. Now, this business is going to be very brisk. It's already very brisk in the sense that the crisis and the austerity policies have aggravated, for example, the performance of the Greek labor market. The terms of the rescue package predicted that GDP in 2011 will be 8.4% lower than its 2008 level, and that unemployment would climb to 14.6% in 2011. Actually, these predictions turn out to be rather optimistic. So the question arises, well, whether the Greek welfare state is fit for the crisis, and the quick answer is no. And the longer answer, I'm going to give it now, not very long. Look at the unemployment figures. We've always had high unemployment among secondary workers, in other words, secondary earners, rather. In other words, young people who find it hard to enter the labor market, and women, especially mothers, who would like to return to the labor market but can't. But on the other hand, our employment levels for male breadwinners were Scandinavian, almost over 90%. And unemployment levels for that group, very low, around 5%, falling to 3.6% in 2008. Well, now unemployment among male breadwinners, or a proxy, males aged 30 to 44, has climbed from, 3.5% in 2008 to 12%. While overall unemployment has climbed almost to 16%, and unemployment rates for secondary earners, women, and young people, 35% or more. This is very important from the point of view of social policy, because the old traditional pattern of labor market participation was terrible from the point of view of modernization of society, you know, the man at work and the woman at home, and the children also at home until they reach the tender age of 35 or 40, but at least protected families from poverty, right? There was at least mostly one earner per family. There were very few households headed by unemployed men or unemployed workers in general. So the population of the unemployed was very different from the population of the poor. Now this is going to change, and you need a social safety net that doesn't exist, but I can't tell you why because I have no time, but it's all in the paper. So I'm going to finish with this slide. My assessment is that the Greek welfare state is unfit to cope with the crisis, and of course this is because we did our best or our worst to create a welfare state that is not at all good at helping people cope with the crisis, but it's very good at paying high pensions and other benefits to privileged categories and such groups. Now we need to bolster social protection in conditions of huge fiscal austerity, and this is going to be difficult, but if we fail to do that, the alternative may be even costlier in terms of social unrest, crime, and all these happy things. All right, I'll stop here.
Great.